Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast that brings you the latest news and interviews inside the Debian community. Brought to you by FrostbiteSystems.com, providing desktops and notebooks pre-installed with Debian. Every purchase from Frostbite Systems, a portion of the proceeds will be donated back to Debian and help support this great project. So stop on by FrostbiteSystems.com and get your Frostbox today. Hello and welcome to This Week in Debian. Today we've got a great episode for you. We're speaking to Moritz Mühlenhoff. He works on the security team for Debian. Moritz, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Moritz, the first thing I'd like to ask everyone that I interview is, how did you first get into Linux and discover Linux?
I think I tried it initially with either an early version of, I'm not quite sure actually. I think it might have been the first time where it actually worked, was probably some early version of SUSE.
Mm.
But I tried before that, but at that time the install didn't really succeed. So the first time I actually had a usable system was somewhere around the early versions of SUSE, but I forgot the exact version.
Okay.
Somewhere in the mid-90s.
I was talking to you earlier, and you mentioned that you're in Germany. What's the like Linux and free and open source software like over in Germany? Do a lot of people know what it is and use it, or you know, do people on the street know what it is if you mention Linux to them?
It depends. If you're approaching someone with a semi-technical background, I think most people are aware, and occasionally it is sometimes in the mainstream media, but usually only in the tech pages. I think in comparison to other countries in Germany, Linux and open source software is more popular in comparison to other countries.
Mm.
But it's still a niche phenomenon, I think. Well, of course, in people which have a technical background or generally scientists, it's more popular than in other grounds. But I think the majority of people is, of course, still using Windows or macOS. So
mm.
I think the user base in the private sector, in the personal sector, is a rough estimate, I think, in the area of 2% at most, possibly even less. But in the in the professional domain, it's actually quite common, especially on the server side. If you look at the German hosting sites, I think most of them are running with Linux-based systems.
I know. I believe SUSE is based in Germany still, right?
Yeah, SUSE was originally it's from the south of Germany, from Nuremberg. Since then, they're now part of Novell.
Yeah.
They have an original, they're originally from Germany, and I think most of the development stuff is still based predominantly in Germany, but also to some extent in Prague. They have some Czech labs.
Do they have a big presence in Germany right now? Like, if people say Linux, do they think SUSE?
This used to be the case in the past, especially if you're starting pretty early with Linux, especially in the 90s. They were more or less the most important and usually the typical German Linux distributions. Most of the fact due to the very good support of ISDN, mm. which is something which which is pretty popular in Germany, well, especially in the 90s, as a way to access the internet. But since then, I think SUSE has lost a bit of its ground to other distributions.
Yeah, yeah.
But in comparison, for example, to the US, Fedora and Red Hat are less popular, especially in the professional sector. Most of the installations are usually still in Debian-based distributions or on the enterprise version of SUSE,
mm.
SUSE Linux Enterprise Server. But Red Hat isn't very popular in Germany.
Mm.
And Fedora, to some extent, it is neither as popular.
So after you installed your first Linux distro and you got started with Linux, how did you eventually end up using Debian and start and join the Debian community?
Mostly out of curiosity, when I got a bit familiar with SUSE, I tried actually. I think Debian was one of the earlier versions I tried to install before I actually succeeded with my SUSE installation. I always liked it because it's a very thorough distribution, which also has a strong technical background, and which was all the time known as the distribution done right properly. And this was always, and especially if you start using it, then you get really used to it, and then there's simply no way back. That's usually the case. And at some point of just using it, I think I initially started digging into the Debian package format at some point, and I think the first package I actually maintained inside of Debian was some it's a software package called PRBoom, which is a Linux GPL port of the original Doom code
Oh,
for
okay.
the first-person shooter game.
So at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned that you're on the security team for Debian. Can you tell us, I mean, it's obvious what the security team does, but can you tell us what they do and, what that involves doing and what the process is like being on the security team?
It's actually split into several larger chunks of work. One point is certainly also one which takes up quite a lot of time, is to monitor the general open source security scene for new vulnerabilities. For example, we're monitoring announcement mailing lists. For example, if a new Apache release is coming out and it mentions that a few security issues are being reported, then we have a central database which is called the Debian Security Tracker, which accumulates all this information and reports which security issues affect which version, because in Debian we usually have one or two supported releases. There's always the stable version of Debian, and 1 year after the release of a stable version, there's also the old stable version, which is still supported security-wise, so that you can have one year of upgrade path for your old version until you update to the next Debian stable version. And of course, there's also the unstable version, the current development version of Debian, which is also quite popular in comparison to other distributions, where most people usually only use the released versions of the distributions. One distinctive feature, I think, in Debian is that a lot of people also use the unstable version, and we're also tracking these vulnerabilities to make sure that they are fixed in a short time frame in the unstable distribution, so that people who are using Debian Unstable are not exposed to security issues for that long. And we add all these information in the central database, and one also important aspect is communication with the rest of the Debian developers. Usually if we find out for a new security issue, we file bug reports in the Debian system, or if it's a security issue which is not yet public. Because when it comes to security issues, there are two classes. The one which are made immediately public. For example, if someone files a bug in the Debian bug tracking system, it's a completely public process. We don't have the concept of hidden bugs or private bugs. Any bug which you file in Debian is automatically a public bug. Or for example, if someone just posts a zero-day exploit to some mailing lists, which happened for the Linux kernel from time to time, that someone without announcing it earlier just releases his exploit, then this issue is immediately public. In this case, we simply file a bug report on the affected package. But in other cases, there's sometimes that an embargo date is being negotiated. For example, if the take it as an example, the OpenSSH maintainers would find out of a certain specific vulnerability. They have the chance to get in contact with the security teams of all the major distributions for a designated private mailing list, and then they can provide us the information and for example, propose an embargo date. So they say, you have this information now and you have 30 days to prepare your updates, and we're going to make it public on the 1st of November, for example.
Mm.
And that way we have the chance to build the update and test the update. And as soon as these security issues goes public, the updated packages are available immediately. While in case, for example, of a zero-day exploit, of course, there's no time interval which would allow us to generate an updated package in advance.
Mm.
So in that case, you basically have to identify the issue and fix it while the issue is still being actively exploited, because everyone is the exploit, but the updated package is not yet available. This also makes up the second largest chunk, or the other second large chunk of work, which is the actual creation of an updated package.
Mm.
For example, in Debian, we have a rather strict policy of only backporting security fixes. There are a few distributions, like, for example, Gentoo or Mandrake, which usually just package new versions which fix the security update. So, for example, if you have let's take OpenSSH as an example again. If there's a vulnerability which is fixed in OpenSSH 5.4, and they currently have the version 4.4, they usually update to the latest current version.
Okay.
While in Debian, we're just cherry picking, we're isolating of all the changes which are being made between version 4.4 and 4.5. We just analyze the patch and extract the isolated security fix, and then we're only applying this to the version which was at that time in Debian. So, for example, if Debian Stable has shipped with OpenSSH 4.2, we only backport the specific security fix so that the behavior of OpenSSH 4.2 isn't changed, because
Oh, okay.
That's always the biggest risk. It's easier to introduce a new version, because you don't have to do a lot of testing, you don't need to do the backporting,
mm.
but it also has the huge risk that you have changes, for example, in behavior, or changes in the format of configuration files, or changes in the behavior of certain exported library functions or something similar. We actually have one or few exceptions where we make exceptions of this rule. The most notable ones are the Mozilla codebase.
Yep.
Because with the Mozilla codebase, we usually follow the releases made by Mozilla, because
okay.
Backporting these is very complicated and they make a lot of changes. And in that case, it would actually be more difficult and more error prone to just isolate the security fixes. But the usual rule of thumb is that Debian only backports security fixes.
I have one question back to what you were first saying about monitoring the mailing lists. You must have a crazy amount of mailing lists that you guys are signed up to. Is there someone that just sits there all day long watching these mailing lists, or is it kind of more like an automated thing where, like you were saying, if something pops up in the mailing list, it gets put over into the tracker? Is that like an automated process, or does someone have to manually go through all that stuff?
It's usually done manually. There's a kind of collaborative stream. There's a project run by the Metro organization, which is called the CVE project. They hand out unique identifiers to a specific security problem. So instead of referring to the OpenSSH remote exploit, which was fixed in version 5.4, you have a unique identifier, for example, in the form of CVE-2010-5008.
Mm-hmm.
And when Debian releases a security advisory, we describe, for example, this fixes a vulnerability in OpenSSH. Then we give a rough description of what the security issue is. And then we also include this identifier so that, for example, if you're doing an automated checks, because, for example, if you're auditing a Debian system, then you can simply check, is the security issue known as CVE-2010-5008 checked? And this collaborative stream, because a lot of whenever a security vendor announces a new security issue, he requests such an ID.
Okay.
This means that we have a system to receive all the new IDs. And one part of the information we collect is that we're going to the stream and check whether any of these IDs actually affect Debian. This can only be done manually because there's no clear way to map the name in the CVE label to the package name in Debian. This is roughly in the area of 5,000 to 6,000 IDs per year, and these need to be checked manually. Another information source is the mailing list, which I mentioned before. There's both a public mailing list, which is called OSS-Security. Mm. Everyone can subscribe there, and a lot of security information is shared through this mailing list. And then there's also the private vendor security mailing list, which pools the security teams of, for example, Red Hat, Novell, Debian, and a few others, Mandrake, the FreeBSD security team.
Mm.
And this is also an information source which we monitor. And another important aspect are also the maintainers, because in Debian has this system of having maintainers which are closely attached to their packages. In other distributions, you have a general maintainer team which maintain just about anything, while Debian still has or will always have the concept of people closely attached to a specific package. So, for example, if you are the OpenSSH maintainer, then you are usually on the announcement mailing lists and you are usually in contact with the OpenSSH maintainers. And if such a maintainer is in close contact with the so-called upstream, which is then the project which is being affected by a security issue, then they often get notified in advance, or they read, for example, the announcement mailing list, and then they get in touch with you. Mm. Not with the security team. And then there's also security issues which are directly being reported to us. We also find out through various security issues just by people writing to our mailing list and saying, I noticed this strange behavior. This is not right. I think I found a security issue. Then we look into it, and then we also inform the other distributions. This is basically all the information which is collected. And then it's fed into a central web-based system, which is called security-tracker.debian.org. And if you're visiting this website, you can check the security history of every package in Debian, and you can check all the outstanding and currently unfixed security issues, both in the unstable branch and also in the stable branch. And you can also check whether a specific security issue, for example, affects Debian at all, because there are also some vulnerabilities where there actually is a security problem, but in some cases it simply doesn't affect Debian, for example, because Debian has chosen to use safer defaults, or because Debian has patched out a certain broken functionality, or there are also some vulnerabilities which only affect cross-platform software, but which doesn't affect the POSIX-based distributions, like, for example, Debian. So, for example, if you have a vulnerability in Pidgin, which only affects Windows systems, then you can go to the security tracker, look up the ID of the specific security problem, then you can check whether Debian is affected or not.
Hmm. Back to applying the patches on, like, the security issues using the OpenSSH as an example, and you were saying that Debian, instead of doing what some other distributions will do by just pushing down an entire new package, you guys just will extract the security fix and put that into the current package in Debian, I'm assuming that must be extremely beneficial to the stability of Debian, not introducing, you know, having to introduce like a new library that might not work with this or that. That must be added benefit to the stability of Debian.
Yeah, this is certainly an important aspect, because in other cases we simply couldn't guarantee that the package behaves still the same after applying the security fix.
Right.
There are always rare exceptions where this is not possible. There have been a few cases in the recent years where, for example, a specific library function turned out to be inherently insecure. So, for example, if you have a library function and it's broken in such a way that you actually need to change this library function, then we've had a few cases where we also needed to change actually the exported interface. Mm. So, for example, the library was patched, and we also needed to patch one of your applications which used this library function in an insecure or now incompatible way.
Mm.
But this is actually very rare, and only if it's conceptually needed. But usually, I think in 99% of all vulnerabilities, we just isolate the bug, the specific patch, and we backport it. There's also a tool which you can use, which is called DebCCAN, which scans the security status of a packet of an installed system.
That's cool.
So, for example, if you have a server, and then this system can connect to the Debian security tracker, and then it checks first the list of packages which are installed, then it checks the versions of these packages, and then it checks it against the data in the security tracker, and if it finds any open vulnerabilities, it generates a mail to the administrator. So you can also apply the information which is stored in the security tracker to a specific system. For example, if you find a server which is forgotten and hasn't been updated for the last 3 months, then you can just check which open security issues are on the system, and then you can check which updates need to be applied now.
That's
usually
cool.
I think for at least 98% of all updates, you can install a Debian security update without further intervention, except restarting system services. But there are also always a few cases where you actually need to do some manual steps, which cannot be automatically generated or performed during an update. But usually, I think for at least 98% of all updates, you can just install the update. There's also a package in Debian which is called unattended-updates, which checks, which automatically installs security updates on a Debian system.
Hmm.
And there's also, which many people might not be aware of, there's a tool which is called check restart. It comes from the Debian package debian-goodies. If you run this script, then it gives you a list of system services which need to be restarted after security update.
Oh, that's cool.
Because you can check this in an automated way by symbol references. So, for example, if you have updated the zlib compression library on your systems, then you usually need to restart a lot of services, which... because if you wouldn't restart all these services, then they would still keep the old vulnerable version of this library in memory. And only after you restart the services, then they make use of the now of the new version which is now available. So if you have a server which has a very, very long uptime, then you can use this tool to check which services need to be restarted without doing a reboot.
Yeah. When it comes to patching... the security holes in certain packages, is it up to, like you were saying, there's specific maintainers for each package, is it up to them to patch it, or does the security team help the maintainer patch it?
It depends. In many cases, the maintainer prepares an update, and then we review it and upload it. But there are also cases, for example, in all the cases where security issue isn't public, and the maintainer isn't being notified in advance, then the backport is done by the security team. I would guess that, that roughly 50% of all updates are prepared by the maintainers and the other half is prepared by the security team to a certain extent. Also, the maintainers sometimes need to help out with testing the security update because Debian is the distribution with the most versatile package pool, and it's impossible to have test environments for all the packages in Debian because there's some, for example, Debian is, I think, the only distribution which is shipping Asterisk and is also releasing security updates for it. In many other distributions, it's, I think, included but not covered by the security support.
Mm.
And especially with Asterisk, it's really difficult. In that case, we always need the maintainer to actually test the update because we usually don't have this very specific voice over IP hardware around. Or in, there are also some very complex packages which you would need half a day to actually create a test setup to test them. And in that case, the maintainers usually have some kind of system around. Either they have an installation at work or for their own purposes, and then they can test the update.
So you work pretty close with the Asterisk guys, or...?
Asterisk was mostly an example, but in Asterisk, we usually then work with the Debian maintainer.
Oh, okay.
And I think if the Debian Asterisk maintainer has any problems, then he will usually contact the Asterisk developers. But we're usually not in, in direct contact with the Asterisk developers. Unless we need to contact them for some kind of clarification on security issues or similar issues.
I'd assume the maintainer anyways just pushes it upstream if there is a bug anyways, so...
Yeah, that's usually the process as it's supposed to be. Of course, there are also some cases where as Debian is a very distributed... distributed developer community, there's sometimes the problems of the so-called orphan packages, which are packages which currently do not have an active maintainer.
Mm.
I think currently in the archive we have about 200 packages which don't have a dedicated maintainer. In that case, they're being taken care of by a dedicated so-called Debian quality assurance group.
Okay.
But there are also some kind of packages which have a designated maintainer, but in which the designated maintainer is currently on vacation or paternal leave or whatever.
Okay.
And in that case, it's we usually need to chime in and... yeah, it depends very much on the package. It's hard to give a rule of thumb, but usually the maintainers, we usually need cooperation with the maintainers.
What made you want to join the security team?
Mostly interest in the general topic as well. And when I joined the security team, I was writing my diploma thesis on a computer security related issue, and as it's the usual case, whenever you write a thesis, you always need something different, and
right,
you're pushing back things because you don't want to work on your thesis, and then it's an excellent way to actually do something useful and procrastinate from your thesis, and this was actually one of the points where I got very active at that point, but I always had an interest in this specific topic.
What's your like day to day work on the security team with Debian? Like, what do you do on a normal day?
It very much depends. It's basically the two main areas of work which I mentioned earlier. So checking new issues, communicating with maintainers, and preparing updates. There's also a bit of organizational overhead, like for example, we're checking new packages sometime which enter the archive, whether they actually have the quality to be in Debian. this is not in the case of a specific review. There's also Debian has a more or less inactive, but the team is still present, a Debian audit team, which consists of a group of people which are reviewing software and trying to find vulnerabilities. But we also there's also some other issues which usually need to be resolved when it comes to the next version of Debian. For example, as Debian is a very very large system consisting of a lot of packages, we also need to make sure that this very large system remains maintainable. And for example, we're ensuring this by enforcing that a lot of packages make use of dynamic libraries. In Debian, it's usually not allowed to link software statically unless you have a very good reason, for example, a rescue system or something similar. And we're also doing a lot of work to prevent embedded code copies. These are copies where a specific software project includes a local copy of a system library. For example, in the past, there used to be a lot of packages which brought their own version of the zlib, the z compression library. And another notorious package used to be the XPDF code-based. Up to a few years ago, there used to be at least four packages which used the XPDF codebase, both KPDF, the PDF viewer from KDE3, for example, XPDF itself, then and other packages. But one of the changes we've made for the previous distributions, and we're pushing even further for the next Debian distribution, is that a lot of packages have been switched to the library version of XPDF, which is called the Poplar library. So when the next release of Debian comes out, whenever there's a security problem in XPDF, we only need to update the Poplar library.
Okay.
While in previous releases, we needed to update XPDF, we needed to update KPDF, we needed to update Poplar itself. And in earlier releases, we also needed to update TTAC, and we also needed to update KOffice. And this has always gone a lot better and a lot easier. And we're also patching a lot of web applications. Because in the web application field, they don't have a really concept of libraries. They just when they need the FCK editor, they're simply included in their web application. While in Debian, we actually patch out all the different FCK packages. So when there's another security problem in the FCK editor, or in some PHP modules, we only need to update one package instead of fixing 5 or 10 web applications. And this is also something we're trying to make sure that such changes are being made for the next Debian version to make our lives a bit easier.
Working so close with security in Debian and or, you know, GNU Linux in general, you know, there's that people always argue, you know, oh, Linux is bulletproof and you don't get viruses and there's no spyware and it's way more secure. What would your opinion be, you know, being a lot more in the trenches, putting these security patches into the, you know, these packages and stuff like that? Like, what is your opinion on, like, the security in GNU Linux in general?
It depends. There's certainly a quite solid stack of applications which are reliable, and for example, Apache has a very good security track record. OpenSSH has a very good security track record, and especially in the server domain, there's a very solid stack of applications which is very secure. But it's not honest to say that free software or GNU Linux per se is more secure than the Windows equivalents, especially when it comes to proactive hardening features. The whole Windows world has catched up quite a lot, if you are running a Windows 7 installations, which with all the security features enabled, then you have a pretty solid system. Most of the security issues you usually find are in application libraries. So, and it doesn't matter whether you run the Internet Explorer or Firefox, both have tremendous amounts of security issues. One of the key benefits you still have with Linux is that it's a lot less valuable access target. So, for example, if you're running Firefox on if you're running Firefox on Linux, you're a lot less exposed to worm-like Trojan horse attacks on the browser than you would be if you're running Internet Explorer or possibly even the Windows version of Firefox. But in general, the state of security with a lot of applications isn't really splendid because especially if it comes to smaller applications written in C only by one or two people, you don't have a lot of peer review, and it's e really easy to make programming errors in C. But
It is.
there's a very but the central stack is actually quite good. So if you're running all the typical applications like Samba and all the usual server applications are open LDAP, then they are usually coded in a pretty good way, and the security looks quite solid. But especially if you're looking at smaller network applications, then it's probably very easy to find a security issue if you look for half a day or a day.
Well, I mean, I guess the advantage to having open code, though, is even when something is discovered, it can be fixed rather quickly.
Yeah, this is actually one of the having the source available isn't there's also always the argument that a lot of a million eyes find a million bugs. If you look at, and in reality, there are not a million eyes which look at the code and spot security vulnerabilities. But the really pleasant thing about free software is whenever you run into such a problem, it's usually in the open and you can still fix it yourself. And even if your software vendor is out of business, you can still fix the security issue on your own. While if you have a if you're running Windows and you have an old application software which is no longer maintained, which is of which the vendor is out of business, then you're left without the ability to actually fix a security issue.
Yeah, and I mean, even in Windows, they're, they have those Patch Tuesdays or whatever, and some security issues will come up, and they'll say, "Oh, well, this affects every Windows, from 7 down to 2000." Like, there's security holes that've been in there for 10 years, 15 years, 12 years. Like they almost don't
Yes,
even
but
bother fixing it,
they possibly even didn't know about it. But all the larger a vendor gets, the more difficult it is for them to ship a security update because you have a lot of partner agreements. You need to run compliancy testing. I think the minimum amount it would take Microsoft to fix a security issue would be at least a week, because even if they had the code fix available within an hour, I think even if they're working 24/7, it will still need them. I'm not familiar with the processes, but it's my gut feeling that they have so many testing programs and compliance requirements, and then they need to ship the security fix to other vendors so that they can test their software with it. And this makes it very difficult to react for them in a timely manner. This is also an advantage which Debian has in comparison to other distributions which support a lot of different distributions. In Debian, we only support the stable distribution and the old stable distribution. So it's no more than two release products. While, for example, Red Hat, if they're issuing a kernel update, they usually need to backport all their changes back to Red Hat Enterprise Linux 2 dot something, which is a 7-year-old kernel. And And you can always see this in cases when there is actually a zero-day exploit on the kernel. Then Debian is usually one of the distributions which pushes out a security update as one of the first distributions. And in that case, Red Hat is usually, and also to the same extent, Novell, which also need to support a lot of distant kernels. It simply takes them a lot of days because they also need to test it with Oracle, because Oracle is possibly
running on top
certified to be run on Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and they cannot push out this kernel update without testing it on Oracle, and this always takes time. While we in Debian have the freedom to just ship the technically correct version and don't need to rely on any partner agreements.
Does Debian have like a sort of like an enterprise package for vendors if they want to get like professional support with Debian? Does Debian do that?
Debian itself doesn't, but there are of course companies which provide commercial support for Debian.
Oh, okay.
These are in very different areas. There are a lot of consultants which are just self-employed and provides support. There's also a few companies which provide hotline or telephone support. And you can also buy a support agreement from Hewlett Packard if you buy the server with Debian on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even know you can get HP stuff with Debian on it.
I don't think it's pre-installed, but they provide all the information you need to install Debian on it, and provide it in their compatibility matrix. And you can also buy the support package if you need support for Debian.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. How many like core people are on the security team?
I think we're 12 people, but I'm not quite sure. But somewhere around the area, not quite sure.
If someone wanted to get involved with the security team, where would they go to check it out?
There are various ways of people getting into the security team. Sometimes it's we once or twice had a basically a call for help where we just ask for people to join the team, and then they could just contact us and tell us what they did so far in Debian and what their specific interest is and so on. And there's also the many of the current members which are in the security team were simply people which were active in the whole Debian security work without actually being a member of the security team, because you can still do a lot of work, and especially in terms of collecting information and updating the security tracker, which you can do without being the security team. And anyone who wants to work on this can always do this even without being a Debian developer. Just go to security-tracker.debian.org, and then you'll find a link to all the introduction documents. And this is usually the recommended path to get into the whole work. And yeah, that's more or less it. I think I've just checked out on the website. We have 15 people working on the security team. Okay. Although there are one or two people which are usually there's one or two people which are busy for an extended area of time with a day job or something similar, but right now we're 15 people.
Okay. Moritz, is there anything else that you'd want to cover that I might have overlooked or that you wanted to mention?
No, I don't think so. I think we have a pretty good overview of what we do.
Yeah, I appreciate your time and all of the work that you put into this. It sounds pretty time consuming to do stuff like this, and people, I'm sure, take it for granted when they see, oh, there's some more updates. I gotta click install updates now.
Yeah,
you know, they just...
it usually kicks in when you when something doesn't work, then you usually notice how many people actually use it. This was actually one of the funny aspects on the. There's this infamous OpenSSL security
Oh, yeah,
issue
from a
which
few
hit
years
Debian
ago.
a few years ago, and while this was pretty rough to handle because a lot of application needed to be fixed and a lot of issues needed to be resolved, it's also had the nice benefit that you actually learned about a lot of Debian installations, which were completely unbeknown to us because suddenly a lot of interesting email addresses contacted us and were asking for more information. And there's a lot of institutions where you wouldn't have thought that they were actually using Debian, but now as this very large problem hit us, there were a lot of questions sent to us, and a lot of institutions came out of the dark which were actually using Debian. Or there was also some testing tool which could test whether a specific web server was affected by the OpenSSL issue, and for example, it also emitted the White House gov address and some other
No kidding.
funny websites, and this was actually a nice side effect. But
No kidding. Yeah, you guys had that fixed in like 6 hours or something, didn't you?
we had known about it in advance, of course. When it was made public, it was made public by us, but I think we knew about it a week earlier, and then we were preparing the update.
Yeah, because I think
And
once
the
it was
guy who is.
announced, it was done like you guys issued the patch like the same day, I think.
Yeah, we when we updated it, we also on the same day we also updated next to OpenSSL. I think we also updated two or three important system services which were affected. Yeah, but we had all the major updates went out, I think, in the first day. And the guy who discovered the issue is also part, because he also was a Debian developer, is also part of the security team by now.
Oh.
So it was also a good way to recruit people.
Yeah, that's one way to get on the team. Well, Moritz, thank you again for your
Yeah, you're
all
welcome.
of your work, and thank you for your time to do the interview.
Yeah, and thanks for running this podcast.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate your time.
Well, have a nice day then.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone or you yourself are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us. We can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.